You're listening to the Reasonable Faith Virtual Chapter Podcast. In this podcast, you'll hear the audio from one of our live discussions. Please join the discussion at reasonablefaithvirtual.org. Well, one question I'll ask you, it's an archaeological question, is, you're familiar with the James Ossuary?
Yes.
So for everybody listening, the James Ossuary was reported to be the bone box of James, the brother of Jesus. And on the side of it was written an inscription. What exactly is James, the brother of Jesus, or something like that? It had Jesus's name on it. There was some controversy about whether it was authentic or not. What are your thoughts on the James Ossuary?
Right. So I have followed that intensely. In fact, I had a book on it. I had a storage room fire. I lost quite a bit of my library, and that was one of the books I lost. But it was written by Ben Witherington, who teaches, I believe it's at Asbury Seminary, and I think he still teaches there. I'm not sure. But Ben Witherington, I think the epigrapher on that, an epigrapher, of course, is someone who studies ancient languages and an ancient text, and the epigrapher was a French scholar by the name of André Lamarre, and it was believed, the controversy was that it was a forgery, and since that time, they've done some really, really high-tech scans of the patina and some of the other things inside the inscription itself, and have determined that it is absolutely not a forgery. It's genuine, authentic, first-century text, but the people who still don't believe that it is James, the brother of Jesus, their main argument is that, well, we don't really know if this is the same one. But Witherington in the book talks about when you look at the population of Jerusalem, you normally wouldn't put, well, you would put your name. So let me go back. I'm getting ahead of myself here. Let me explain what was going on. So in what archaeologists call Second Temple Judaism. So during a period called Second Temple Judaism, Judaism was an interesting phenomenon, and there were certain things that were indicative of Jewish practices in the period leading up to Christ and a little bit after that until the destruction of the temple. One of them, there are actually multiple things that are indicative of Second Temple Judaism. Ritual vessels that were made out of limestone instead of clay. And another one is mikvah, so ritual purity baths. And then the other one was being buried in an ossuary. An ossuary is essentially a fancy word for a bone box or a small coffin. And an ossuary was about the length of the longest bone in your human body, so the length of your femur. And this practice of being buried in ossuaries was primarily in the Second Temple period. So approximately 200 BC all the way up to about 70 AD. And in the first century, when Jesus was, of course, and the disciples were alive, there were ossuaries, and you would be basically to place your body in a tomb, in a freshly cut tomb. The skin, the body would be prepared a little bit, but the body would, of course, the skin would rot away, and they would, about 2 years being in the tomb, the family would take the bones, and they would place the bones in a limestone box. Called an ossuary. And in that ossuary, if you were a famous person, you would have your name primarily on it. Sometimes you'd have your name, but especially if you had a famous relative. This one had James, the brother of Yeshua, James, the brother of Jesus. And it was in Jerusalem. It's first century. So do we know with absolute 100% certainty that this is exactly the same? No, we can't say that we know with 100% certainty. But when you look at, when you start looking at all the provenance and all the context, it's likely, it's highly probable that this is the same exact James, the brother of Jesus. But, you know, of course, the New Testament, the case of the New Testament, does not rest primarily on that ossuary, but it is a very powerful piece of the puzzle, and I think, I personally think that it is legitimate, and I think it very likely is the same James, who was the brother of Jesus.
Yeah.
Can I just ask? question on that comment.
Yeah, go ahead, Caleb.
Yeah, no, I haven't looked that much into the James ossuary, but to my understanding, I thought that both Josephus and I think later Hegesippus talk about the death of James and say that he was, you know, stoned by the Pharisees, and I think Hegesippus says he was thrown across the Temple Mount and buried on the spot, and that his burial place is still there to this day. I'm just curious, like, is location where they found that consistent with that description, or because I feel like that would be, I'm not sure they would have buried James in an ossuary. Like, I think the text seems to imply that he was buried in the ground with like a headstone, but I could be wrong in that. But like, do you know the location that would be consistent to where the Temple Mound is, or would that be further off, or maybe it was moved when they did the reburial process of the bones, or what? I'm not sure, or Hegesippus could be wrong.
I mean, yeah, awesome. I mean, I would. The thing about it is that you have to realize that in the early church, especially at that time, I mean, people were very, yeah, absolutely. It's not necessarily a conflict of interest. They definitely would revere their loved ones in some way or another. So it's possible that, you know, when Hegesippus and others were writing this, that, you know, his body was in the ground, and then they got the bones and put it in an ossuary. That's possible. And I would have to see I would have to look at the original. I'm not sure if it's an unprovenanced artifact. Well, unprovenanced means that it came from a collector, or it actually came from an excavation. I want to say that it actually came from a collector, and that's one of the other controversies about it. So I would have to double check Ben Witherington. You should check out the book by Ben Witherington. You can get it on Amazon. You'll probably find a used copy really cheap. But if you really wanted to dive into that, and I'm sure that Witherington certainly gets into the Hegesippus and other passages that talk about where his body was laying.
Yeah, no, that's helpful. And I guess, like, do you have any other opinions of famous archaeological artifacts associated with it in terms of authenticity? Like, I figured most people don't think the church, like Bethlehem, is authentic, because I'm not sure there's any real.
Oh yeah, yeah. So yeah, absolutely, I do. Some are not. It's sort of like up and down. There are some that are legitimate, some that are not. One thing, I've done a lot of research on this. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre, I believe, is the right, correct spot. Whether or not you believe or don't believe in the historical bodily resurrection, I believe that is the location where Jesus was buried. And because for multiple reasons, one of the top archaeologists in Jerusalem, he's actually a Dutch scholar, who in 1968, I want to say it was between 1968 and 1967, actually took part in the excavation of Jerusalem when the Jews had control of the Temple Mount. His name is Dr. Lean Rittmeyer. And the book that, if you want to really dig into the archaeology of Jerusalem, you can get it on Amazon. It's called The Quest by Dr. Lean Rittmeyer, L-E-E-N Rittmeyer. And anyway, Rittmeyer has done really is considered to be one of the top authorities in the world on the Temple Mount. And in fact, I asked some of my colleagues about what they thought about it. And in the words of one of my archaeological colleagues, they said, any archaeologist worth their salt knows that that's the real actual site.
From my research, I understand most Jerusalem archaeologists do think that's authentic. I think there's only certain degrees of certainty we can have, but I have been impressed with some of the things about it. Like, I think one of the top arguments, to my understanding, is that originally when, because, you know, Constantine's the one who, or sorry, Constantine's wife, Helena, technically, is the one
mother,
who...
His mother.
Yeah, his mother. I'm sorry. You're right. His mother is the one who unearthed it after talking to bishops, and there was a temple above it that was built by, I think, Hadrian in like the early second century. And there was a tomb on... But the thing that tipped them off was originally it was inside the walls of Jerusalem, which doesn't seem right because they would have crucified people outside the walls. But they found out, I think it might have been in that excavation that you mentioned, the 60s, maybe it was prior to that, that there was a second set of walls that was actually earlier because Herod expanded them in the 40s. And so the original walls would have, that spot would have been outside. And so it's like, well, you know, if they're finding the spot hundreds of years later, then either they just got lucky. And plus, they also found tombs of the same kind, like, I forget they're called, the kind of like almost like a mausoleum-esque tombs, like loculi, you know, like those kinds of tombs that would have been inserted.
Correct. Yes, that's right.
cemetery around that area too. So, and that says a lot because Jerusalem, you know, is a very old area with a lot of tombs from various periods. You have Old Testament tombs, you have tombs following that. You have a pretty long history. So to not only get the spot right about the walls, but to have the same time period, the right kinds of tombs rather than tombs that are, you know, much older or something is significant. Exactly. I mean, and, you know, we have examples like the Garden Tomb, which virtually no one thinks is authentic because it's too old. So you do have kind of controls for that to roll out. So yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think that is, I'm surprised it's not talked about more, to be honest, because a lot of people, when they talk about the empty tomb, like there is a lot of textual evidence there, but I'm surprised that like the archaeological evidence for the burial spot doesn't get more attention by most scholars. I think it probably should, because it's pretty interesting.
I agree. I completely agree. I thought it was really interesting that in the 1300s, the Franciscans were actually, they were there in the Holy Land, and they were actually, it was actually under the control of the Ottoman Empire. And they actually gave them permission. They actually, one of the first things they bought, the Franciscans in Jerusalem, was a place that they had traced back to the upper room, the cenacle, the room where they believed Jesus had the Last Supper, you know, the Passover with the disciples. And eventually, I believe the Roman Catholic Church eventually gave them, one of the popes gave them this official role as protectors of the holy site in the Holy Land, and it's called the Custodia Sancta Terra. In other words, the custodians of the Holy Land. And to this day, if you go around Israel and you see some of the holy sites, you'll see the Franciscans are the ones that are sort of there taking care of those sites. That dates back to the 1300s. So, but with the case of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, you are correct. Helena, which we learned from Eusebius of Caesarea, she actually had people that lived in Jerusalem, both believers and unbelievers, who remembered the site because of what the Romans had done. They built things over it to make them forget it. But in doing so, they actually preserved it. And in the tomb, in fact, just a couple of years ago, they actually cleaned out some of the, they opened up the bottom parts of the caves, and they reinforced the building over the top of the inner, you know, cave area. And it's called the edicule because it was built in, I want to say it was in the Byzantine period. And then in the 1100s, there was a basilica built over it. And that is what you see today, but it's become encrusted with so many layers of buildings that it's really hard to know what was where. But I think that's the authentic location.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Reasonable Faith Virtual Chapter Podcast. If you'd like to join the discussion, please join us at reasonablefaithvirtual.org.